He was a young adult by the time of his arrest, but he came across more as a teenager, as an awkward, socially awkward teenager who couldn't keep eye contact when he spoke to you, mumbled and spoke quietly, and just seemed small and harmless.
Hey guys, this is The Missing Ones. I am Liberty Campbell.
And I'm Alexis Peterson.
Okay, so we already recorded this, but I'm dumb and didn't hit record. So we're redoing this. Continue telling me about your allergies, please.
Got my hot chocolate and...
What's that random?
Well, so my voice just feels really raspy. And so I'm like, oh, something nice and warm will make it not sound as raspy. And like this past week, my allergies have been so bad. I don't know what it is, but everything has just like said, hey, spring is here. And so like my car is heavily coated in pollen, like yellow pollen. Used to be a blue car, now it's a yellow car. And so with that and then working with the thing I'm allergic to, I've had no voice for the past week, so good thing we recorded early on the last one and are recording now, because I had no voice all week. And so now I'm just sitting here with my hot chocolate ready to record.
I wake up every single morning afraid that I have COVID because I like can't breathe. My allergies are so horrible. I've like started taking medication before I go to bed so that I don't wake up feeling like a troll, and it's helped. So
yeah, I have to take it
that.
Right when I wake up, and then again right before I go to work. And then like I feel like at night the air in my house gets super dry, so it's kind of hard to breathe as well.
I get it. We already did our chit-chatting. You guys, I cannot believe we did this. We did the whole have a great week and she said bye. And then I was like, holy crap, I didn't hit record. The best part though is that last week she said, wouldn't it be funny if we did the whole thing and you didn't hit record?
I don't think it happened unless you got that part recorded. Proof or it didn't happen.
I'm sure I can find proof. Actually, probably not, because I think I hit stop before you said it, but it's fine. I hate you for it. It's fine. Oh. Are you drinking out of a Christmas mug? Is that what I see? Was that a Christmas mug? Bah humbug.
You know, just got to get that personality since we're recording this at 12:30 at night.
You know what? It's only 10:41 here. But I have to be up at like 5 a.m. So.
Yeah, well, we could record at early in the morning instead of late at night. Then it would be a normal time in the morning for me and crazy early for you.
Listen, I am pretty much a potato until about 9 a.m. I am not a person until 9 a.m. And at about 10:30, I start turning into an unfiltered monster. So... just be aware of that.
So, did you do anything fun this week?
I fought with my 2-year-old, and I did start a new job, so that was exciting. I actually, like, today we got to go hiking for my job, which is super cool. And we took my boss's dog with us, and we got to this, like, point where there was a waterfall and, like, a huge pool of water to the left of us. And then there was, like, a cliff that was kind of curved and had, like, footsteps carved into it that you could climb and like keep going on the trail. And me and the dog were like, that's not happening. We're not doing that. So we just sat there and watched all of these people go up and down this thing. But other than that, no. What about you?
Just more car repairs. That O2 sensor that we thought was going to be a simple fix turned out to be the catalytic converter, which I've heard that term used more in the past 2 months than I have my entire 25 years of life. So,
well, only because you had one stolen out of your moving truck, which When you told me it was the catalytic converter, I was like, did it get stolen? Because I personally think that would have been really funny and really ironic. I mean, I would have felt for you, but it would have been funny.
Well, like earlier that same week that we got that stolen from our truck, the Keto Cakes truck in Salt Lake City got theirs stolen.
Oh yeah, you told me about that.
And so it's just like a huge coincidence that like they got theirs stolen, and then I think about a week later we got ours stolen in Kansas.
You know what's really funny about that is that my sister today told me she wanted to move to that part of the country. I don't know if she wants me to share that on my podcast, so maybe I won't, but
I have a friend who just moved there. She was like really close to, I think she's in Kansas City or...
She wants to move to Kansas City, Missouri. Anyways, what I was going to say is that there were some catalytic converters here stolen here in Cedar. So, I mean, like, it's something that just happens everywhere. I think they're worth a lot of money, so...
Yeah, there's a little, like, platinum or copper piece inside that's really valuable. That's why people steal them.
I guess it's an easy way to make money.
It's like $1,800, so, yeah.
Please do not commit crimes because we told you to. Please do not commit crimes because we told you to.
Yeah.
Listen, I do not have the time or the money to deal with that, so I'll deny it.
So the car went back in the shop, and then we just kind of had like an adventure day. We took our dog to the beach, and then we went to this like famous seafood place by the naval base that's up here. And then we went to this, it's under the national park system, but it's not a national park. It's like I forgot what it's called. It's just like a reservation area that has Fort Caroline. And so I'm slowly training my husband to be an Instagram husband, which just means he takes all my photos. And the way I do that is to set up the camera with the settings I want, hand it to him and say, all you need to do is point and click, and this is where I want you to have in the frame. It's just like this, you know.
I love that. I saw the pictures that you posted on Instagram. I thought they were so cute.
Yeah, that the ones with him were his idea. And so I set my camera up on a timer, and I set it to have multiple bursts so we can do like multiple poses really fast.
That's
but
really smart.
He doesn't quite get that concept. And so it's me doing multiple poses and him.
And him just awkwardly standing there.
Yeah. But then we also didn't like really collaborate. So he had this idea. He's like, let's do a totem pole. And I was like, okay, great. And most totem poles that I know of are like animal based. And he was doing like yoga based poses. And so here I'm doing a moose while he's doing prayer hands.
I love that. I love that so much. You should know that. I can't get my husband to do cute things like that with me.
Oh, it depends on his mood, honestly. He has to be in a good mood to want to do things. Otherwise, he's like, another photo? Don't you have enough? No.
You're like, no, suck it up, buttercup. Okay, well, after this break, we are going to go ahead and get right into the episode. This episode is different from ones we've done before. This girl that we are going to talk about isn't missing. She never was, but she was exploited and she was bullied. Alexis, will you please give our listeners a disclaimer?
Absolutely. This episode could be triggering or upsetting to those who struggle with depression, anxiety, were bullied, or are triggered by suicide. Please proceed with caution.
Bullies are a part of life, plain and simple. There is no reason for them. There is no reason to be mean to someone else. My mom always told me that we judge others on what we don't like about ourselves, and that's where we get bullies from. But in today's episode, I don't really think that was the case. I think that this was just kids being mean. If you enjoy true crime, you've probably heard about the girl from Port Coquitlam in British Columbia. Her name was Amanda Todd, and today I want to share her story. chatting via webcam has been around since the 90s, but it didn't start becoming really popular with everyday people until Skype came on the scene in about 2003. Now, fast forward to 2009, 2010, video web chats like Omegle are popular and teens are spending more and more of their time on the computer. And nowadays, there is a webcam in every laptop on the market.
I remember when these web chats first came out and were super popular, but I'm talking about with the Skype age, and I didn't get into Skype or anything like that until my senior year of high school, and I only downloaded it just to do a project with one of my friends. And I think I was on another one time, but that was with friends, and we didn't really like do anything with it. It was just kind of like, let's just see what it is, and then I think that's it. But since then, I haven't really heard of very many like sites like Skype. I mean, obviously there's Zoom and FaceTime, but not too many that are like focused on stranger to stranger. But I know that like I don't really use those sites, so I'm not actively looking for them.
Yeah, I mean, a quick Google search would give you tons of them. Not last week, but the week before, we talked about Emerald Chat and how I was on there for all of 30 seconds. And this was just chat. This was not video chatting. Like, somebody asked me if I was horny within 30 seconds. Like, so, I mean, it's out there if you're looking for it. But like you said, we're not looking for it. We're not using it. But Amanda was looking for it. She was shy and awkward in person, like so many young teens. But when she stepped in front of a camera, she was a shining star. There are countless videos of Amanda singing to the camera, and it was very clear that she was going to be a star. In fact, here is a clip of her singing one of my personal favorite songs. That is one of my personal favorite songs, and I remember the first time I heard it, I played it on repeat over and over and over. And if you're wondering who it's by and what it is, it's called Who You Are, and it's by Jessie J.
She sounds really good. You can definitely see that shy personality come through, because as she's singing, she sounds super confident. But if you watch her as well, she looks away from the camera the entire time. And when she catches herself looking at the camera, she kind of smirks and then looks away real quick. Because it's that I feel a little bit embarrassed, but I love doing this.
Yeah. And I mean, that's not even close to like her top video. I mean, she is really talented and she kills it, if you ask me, in any one of her singing videos. This, unfortunately, is not the video that she is most known for, and I will tell you a little bit more about that later. But she originally asked her mom for a webcam, and she said no. She said that it wasn't something that was safe, and like, kids didn't need a webcam. But then she went and asked her dad, and he said sure. I mean, he looked at it as a stage for the world, only the webcam would turn into so much more than that. Amanda was only 13 when she started talking to people on the internet. She enjoyed making friends and interacting with people from all over the world, like myself, her and her friends spent many nights using it to talk to other teens and adults over the internet. One night, while live on a website called Blog TV, Amanda was live with over 100 people watching. These people sweet-talked her, made her feel safe and comfortable with them, and once she did finally feel comfortable and safe enough, she lifted up her shirt and flashed the webcam. In that split moment, a man on the other side of the computer took a screenshot, saving the teen's vulnerable image forever in time. And I'm sure that you were taught, once it's on the internet, it's there forever. And this screenshot of 13-year-old Amanda was no different. She thought it was a joke. Everyone was flashing their webcams, dancing in short shorts, or barely any clothes at all. What was the big deal? Well, the screenshot of her flashing her breast was sent to the kids she went to school with and her mother. After the image was shared, Amanda was contacted by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police at her father's house. In an interview, Amanda's father said that she played it off as a joke, as if it wasn't a big deal. She just was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened. It's not a big deal. But we all know that child pornography is a big deal. A really, really big deal. There are people in this world that will go through these websites. Along with sending this image to her peers and her family, they uploaded this picture to a porn website. And there are people in this world who will go through these websites and will track down the girl in the image, only to blackmail them. On Christmas Eve of 2010, Amanda's mom, Carol, got a Facebook message saying that her daughter was being exploited and letting her know that Amanda needed to stop because it was older men who were blackmailing her into doing more. Carol informed the person sending the message that it was now a police matter and that she would not be talking to them anymore about it.
So good for the mom for making it serious enough to make a police report about it.
I agree 100%. When Amanda went back to school after the photo was sent out, she had to face her peers as the girl in the picture. And she faced embarrassment, anxiety, depression, all on a daily basis. Life for her after this mistake was not easy. And I don't have to tell you that teenagers can be mean for no good reason. I mean, they will tease anyone for anything. So you can only imagine the torment and the bullying that Amanda faced from the kids at her school. They started to slut shame her. They called her a cam whore, asking if it was going to be a regular thing. They called her a porn star. I mean, among everything else. The bullying and tormenting got so horrible and so bad that she actually had to switch schools just to get a break. Amanda felt alone in the world, like no one cared about her anymore. Well, in spring of 2011, Amanda got another message from the person who was trying to blackmail her into doing more inappropriate things. So naturally, Carol and Amanda took the message to the RCMP. This would be the second time in 6 months that they would be told about this blackmailer. The RCMP would be notified a third time, but this time it was by the staff at her new school. Someone sent the photo of Amanda flashing the camera to her teachers at her new school. And of course, they had to report it. Even after the third police report, they were no help.
So is there anything saying why the police weren't helping? Like, isn't it their job, especially since this is the third report?
You would think so. Nothing I read said anything about why they didn't do any, like, investigating into it. There's no real rhyme or reason that I could tell from anything that I read or watched. They just basically told her, well, get off social media. We hope it we hope it works out for you. This meant that they had to deal with this blackmailer on their own. People never stopped asking for more pictures, and she was told to stay away from these sites. But as teenagers do, she ignored her parents and authorities and continued to use these websites, so therefore she continued to be exploited. And as far as I know, she didn't send any more images or do any more webcam shows where she showed any of her body. But it's not impossible that she didn't, or that she did. It wouldn't have mattered if she got offline anyways, because they would have found a way to get to her. While this was happening, police in Kingston, Ontario, were contacted by police in Alberta and in England. They were on the trail of a serial blackmailer whose youngest known victim was 9 years old. CBC's The Fifth Estate did an episode about Amanda Todd, and in that episode, they speak to Stephanie Morgan, who at the time this aired in 2014, worked for Ontario's Integrated Child Exploitation Unit in Kingston. Now, I want to make it very clear that this person is not suspected in Amanda's case at all. But because he was exploiting children in the same way Amanda was exploited, I felt that it was important to share with you guys. This is what she had to say about the suspect who was exploiting these children.
What were the depths of what his requests were for them to do online?
Sexual acts, including masturbation, insertion of objects, and it even ranged as far as bestiality.
You were profiling this guy, so what do you think he was getting out of this?
My impression is that he was getting a sense of power that he maybe didn't experience in his own personal life, power over other people, and some sexual satisfaction as well. He was a young adult by the time of his arrest, but he came across more as a teenager, as an awkward, socially awkward teenager who couldn't keep eye contact when he spoke to you, mumbled and spoke quietly, and just seemed small and harmless.
But he just seems like such an everyday character out there as opposed to some evil predator.
That's awful to do what he... I can't imagine what those kids were thinking or doing because of what he made them feel.
Well, I mean, he gained their trust. These kids thought that they were interacting with someone that loved them and cared for them and wanted to protect them. And he brainwashed them and he groomed them. And I can only imagine what kind of predator he would be in person. They tracked the user's IP address and were able to determine that he was actually in Kingston. He was part of their community. The name they came up with was 21-year-old Mark Bedford. Bedford was no stranger to the system, and his name was well known. According to globalnews.ca, in 2008, he was convicted of extortion, making and distributing child porn, impersonation, and criminal harassment. In all of these charges, every single one of the girls was underage, and the youngest one was 9 years old. He served the 3 years that he was sentenced to, and then was released in 2011 on a one-year peace bond, with restrictions that he did not appeal and that were given to him because of his likeliness to reoffend. Things like not having access to a computer or internet, not being allowed to live near or around a school, playground, anything that might involve children. He was not allowed to live with a person underneath the age of 18. Basically, they took away anything that he could use to reoffend. Well, he did not comply. He went back to jail and spent 27 months there until he was released again on a peace bond with similar conditions. In 2018, he was again put away for allegedly breaching that peace bond. On the 23rd of March, 2020, he went before a judge and tried to make it very clear that he was not a hacker. I guess they were trying to show him as someone who was like hacking into these girls' computers and doing weird things. But the reason that he did this was to argue that he should have his computer restrictions lifted, because I guess that where he was going to school, they weren't providing the supervision he required for being on the computer. And his lawyers were saying that it was keeping him from pursuing education and employment. Bedford has been diagnosed as a pedophile and underwent a risk assessment for the court by forensic and clinical psychologist Jan Luman. Alexis, will you read what he had to say about Bedford?
So, absolutely. So it says, quote, "In general, pedophilia is considered a lifelong condition. It is something that can be managed if the person is motivated and takes it seriously," unquote. So I've never heard of pedophilia as a condition.
So it's not uncommon that it's not known as a condition. A lot of people hear pedophilia or pedophile and think sick jackass, which they're not wrong. But you're only a sick jackass if you act on it, in my personal opinion. And I think that the best way I can describe it is it's similar to alcoholism, not where you're addicted necessarily, but it is something that can be treated and like handled and managed. There is a article done by Harvard that I will put in the show notes if you want to read more about this. I'm not going to touch any more on it because I'm not super well informed on it. And that was my two cents, is that it was similar to something like alcoholism, or maybe something like bipolar disorder or something. I mean, yeah, it's a touchy subject. So I suggest you read the article by Harvard if you want more information. Detective Ashley Rathbone of Kingston Police Department testified that Bedford does not accept his diagnosis. He hasn't sought any treatment in the community, and he hasn't done anything to lower the risk of him offending again. And Jan Lumen also said that he wasn't aware of Bedford taking any steps to manage his condition. In fact, Lumen used to supervise Bedford at the regional treatment center, and he said that Bedford is in the highest risk group to reoffend. But he also included that this calculation was based on old information, and he could not assess the dynamic factors in Bedford's life today because Bedford refused to talk to him in order to do so, which to me is a big red flag. Lumen does go on to say that sex offender treatment is expensive and is only offered in a few places in Ontario and only one place in Kingston. And that anything that allows Bedford to re-engage with the community in a pro-social way would be good. So as of August 2020, he can now own a computer, but he is not allowed to communicate with anyone underneath the age of 16 and is not allowed to have any kind of social media or access to things like discussion forums, bulletin boards, chat rooms, and a long list of other things, which I'll have a link to that at our blog if you want to see what else he's not allowed to do. He is truly a different kind of predator. I mean, you think about strangers on the internet and you think about a fat old man in his mom's basement. But in reality, it could be the teenage kid down the street or the 21-year-old college student living in the dorms. Now, back to Amanda. She was still being blackmailed by others. People were still saying, well, we're going to send this picture out unless you give us more. And I mean, her mom kept the messages that she was being sent and gave all of them to the RCMP. She wanted to know what they could do. The RCMP suggested that she close her social media and stay offline, and that there wasn't much they could do to help. So she was on her own.
So that's it? That was their solution?
Pretty much, yeah. They were pretty much rendered useless at this point. Which is interesting, because in some cases, the RCMP would take over accounts and pose as the children in order to, like, catch the person behind the computer. But for Amanda, they never did that. They never took any kind of action to find out who did this and who was behind this. At one point, someone created a fake Facebook account and made the profile picture the picture of Amanda flashing the camera. And they posted, sent to about 280 peeps, enjoy the shit fest, unquote. A year after this all started, it became very clear that it was taking a toll on Amanda. Her friends and school's guidance counselor were concerned for her. She had so much anxiety that she was sick and didn't want to be around anyone. People were horrible to her. In a message found on her laptop by the Fifth Estate, she talks about how people have told her that no one likes her or wants her there and to go back to where she came from. And even went as far as telling her that if she died, they would throw a party. She goes on in the message to say that she cries herself to sleep and begged for help. She, I'm going to add a trigger warning here for self-harm. Amanda decided to cut herself. She started cutting herself and at one point she spent 3 weeks in the hospital. She was fighting so hard to get better. to do better and to feel better. But it was just, it was too much. In early September of 2012, Amanda put together a video of her holding up flashcards. They told her story. Her mom called it a release video and her dad called it a wake-up call. It was really a cry for help. People finally noticed her. People finally rallied behind her, but it wasn't enough and it was too late. On October 10th of 2012, Amanda took her own life. She died in her mom's home alone. And something that is really special is that after posting the infamous video, she talked about her appointment to get a Stay Strong tattoo. And because she didn't get to make it to that appointment, her dad got the tattoo for her. And he had her ashes mixed into the ink. Her last message to her mom was that she loved her and not to be mad at her. After Amanda's suicide, a task team of 20 officers finally got their shit together and started investigating. Now, her mom says that it's too late, but I don't know if it really would have made any difference. In fact, while doing research for this video, I found memes and jokes about her killing herself and her suicide. So even after she was bullied literally to death, she is still being made fun of. That's the shitty world we live in. So though I am glad that they are finally doing some research into her case and into who was blackmailing her, I don't know that it would have made a difference if they had caught him or not. I only have one thing to say, and that is that your words matter. Think about what you might say and what it will do to someone behind closed doors, because you never know. You don't know what your words could do to someone. Today, we want to share with you the Suicide Prevention Hotline, and I want to let you know that it is more than okay to reach out. If you need to talk to someone, please call 800-273-8255. And if you don't feel like you can call them, you can contact us on Instagram, or if you know me in person, you can call me. You get the gist. Remember, see something, say something. So as of late, we have been highlighting a child each week who has gone missing, but we don't really have a whole lot of information on them. And we're doing this to bring more awareness to them, because we can't tell their stories if we don't know them, and we can't find them if we don't know they're missing. So Alexis, will you please share this week's missing child?
Absolutely. This disappearance happened 20 years ago, and I found this first, and then I saw the post that the missingkids.org posted on their Instagram. So you can find out more information through them. But this is on FBI.gov is where I found it. So her name is Bethany Leanne Markowski. She was born February 1st, 1990 in Tennessee. She has brown hair, green eyes. At the time of her disappearance, she was 4'8". And weighed about 95 pounds. She was last seen wearing a green shirt, blue jeans, and black shorts. She was about 11 years old at the time of her disappearance and was last seen by her father in the parking lot of the Old Hickory Shopping Mall in Jackson, Tennessee, on the afternoon of March 4th, 2001. Bethany had gone into the mall alone while her father waited for her in the car. After about 2 hours had passed, Bethany's father went into the mall to look for his daughter, but was unable to locate her. Investigative efforts have revealed that Bethany was last seen after a trip to Little Rock, Arkansas, and no information has come out past that. You can contact your local FBI office or the nearest American embassy or consulate. the current field office who's taking or like in charge of the case is in Memphis, Tennessee.
Well, hopefully someone will recognize this girl and know where she is or know what happened to her. We will have her information on our Instagram page and over on our blog as well. If you guys are interested in seeing that and sharing that, we would really appreciate it. Thanks, guys, for listening. Amanda's case is hard, but something that we all need to be aware of. Keep an eye on your kids and keep an eye on their online activities and listen when they talk to you. Listen and care about what they are saying to you.
So remember to follow us over on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Missing Ones Pod. You can also join us over on our new Facebook discussion group. Just search the Missing Ones discussion group and hit join. We want it to be a space for people to come talk about the podcast, missing kids, and other cases that draw their attention. And most importantly, share with your friends.
Have a great week, you guys.
Bye.